Welcome to the first NYU Arts and Science Alumni Podcast, where we feature alumni who are working in various fields and have interesting experiences to share. Our guest today, Glenn Whitman, joins us over the phone from California with his writing partner, Rob Chipetta. Glenn and Rob are currently the science guys behind the hit new Fox television show, Fringe. Glenn, Rob, thanks so much for being here today.
Thanks for having us.
Great to be here.
So, Glenn, you went to NYU, correct?
That's right. I was a graduate student in economics, and I got my degree in 2000.
And do you have any specific memories of NYU? Any spots on campus where you spent a lot of time?
Let's see. The economics department, at least at the time, was in 269 Mercer, which is right on West 4th Street. And so obviously I spent a lot of time in that area. And I remember pizza places that apparently aren't there anymore. The last time I visited New York, they were gone. I also lived up in the Midtown area, the Garment District, and so I spent a lot of time at Times Square and Penn Station, basically.
Can you both talk about what you're doing now and how you got into it?
Well, we came to it through different routes, but we were actually friends in high school. We were on the high school debate team together, so that's how we knew each other, but we ended up in Los Angeles through different routes. I came here for an academic job, a professorship in economics at California State University, Northridge, and Robert.
And I got a law degree from the University of Texas in 2001 and just had other friends and contacts out here and came out to California, to L.A. to do screenwriting.
And so when he came out here, the two of us started doing consulting on various projects, various screenwriting projects. Coming from our various points of expertise, I could usually talk about game theory and statistics, and Robert has a legal background.
So I would usually talk about all the law stuff that was happening on the shows. You always have interrogations and people citing, you know, the U.S. Criminal Code and all that kind of stuff, courtroom scenes.
Right. So then the two of us got together and decided that we wanted to get a foot in the door of this business. So we started writing scripts together in our spare time, in addition to doing the consulting. And finally, we were able to get this gig on Fringe, where we are part of the writing staff, but we also have some responsibilities for web content. And the two of us also have sort of fallen into the role of science guys on the show. So we end up providing the scientific background or basis, such as there is, for the various weird stuff that happens on this sci-fi show.
Let me just say that I watched the first six episodes of Fringe, and I'm completely hooked. It's such a phenomenal show.
Oh, great.
Yeah,
fantastic.
Spread
the word.
I really
can always
do
more
it.
Viewers. We have a whole lot of fun on the show, coming up with absolutely crazy ideas and then trying to find a way to make them seem real and scary and connected to people.
So I'm curious, how many ideas do you actually come up with? And in the end, how many of those ideas are used?
Well, those are two separate questions. First, the writing staff usually tries to come up with, you know, what the A story, what the concept of that week's episode is going to be. And, you know, sometimes it's given to us from higher ups and handed down, and other times we break it in the room. And if we're breaking it in the room, then we go through easily between 10 to 20 different ideas before we land on one. It can be up to that much. And after that, that's when we really start doing the science parts. And the science, you know, we try to give them as many different options as possible on how something can happen, on how you can... I'm trying to think of
have
what
babies grow really fast.
There you go. That happened last night. So yeah, how what are all the different ways that you could have rapid growth in a human being? You know, babies growing up in 24 hours from infants to adults.
It's an interesting process being on a writing team because you begin to realize how difficult it is to even distinguish your ideas from anybody else's. To try to quantify the contribution of a single person is very, very difficult. You know, often there will be ideas that come from somebody else, and then Robert's and my role is to try to figure out some kind of a bogus scientific justification for it or a real scientific justification for it, just to give it some grounding. So it's difficult to say who does how much.
Do either of you have any favorite sources that you turn to for ideas, such as science journals or websites?
Wikipedia!
No, the funny thing is about Wikipedia is that it's... I would never trust Wikipedia as my final source on anything, but it's always a great start because it has links to everywhere else. But also, often we've started with the scientific idea. So we regularly peruse your science magazines, everything from New Scientist to Science News to Omni, Wired, Discover, Seed, Scientific American, Popular Mechanics, just all your various magazines. Plus, we occasionally go to the more fundamental journals of disciplines, such as Nature, if we're looking for anything in the world of the biological sciences especially. And those end up providing the seeds for ideas.
And then we also call on friends, family, contacts to, you know, try to pick their brain and see what is cutting edge, what is actually possible, what, you know, if you were actually going to try to do something, what are the steps that you have to take to remove somebody's heart or, you know, put together, I don't want to say blow up a building on the internet. You know, how would you go about, like, trying to, you know, cut a piece of steel in half? You know, little pieces of things like that. We're always trying to add, you know, real, what do you want to say?
Real bits of science.
Real bits of science and actual real technical ability into the show.
Right.
The actual process of doing something so that when our characters are there, they can actually go through some of the motions that someone who's done something like that can go, oh, yeah, that's how I start the process of welding two sheets of metal together.
Right.
And then once you start there, you know, where it takes you after that is up to the writers of how they want to use it in the show. But we just want to have them start at a place that everyone goes, oh, yeah, that's real.
We're both fortunate in having multiple contacts we can draw on. I have a sister who's in medical school, so I call her up with a lot of strange medical questions. And I have a dad who is a chemical engineer, so he's a good person to talk to about explosions and chemical reactions and so forth. And Robert.
My dad's a professor of science education at the University of Houston, so he knows all sorts of little experiments that you can use to explain or prove a scientific principle. And that's the other half of what we do. A lot of times, it's not just how does someone do something. What we really have found our role to be on this show is how can our mad scientist, Walter, explain it? How do you explain a person growing in 24, you know, conceiving a baby and then having it grow to maturity in 6 hours?
Right. Or how do you explain the process by which a person with no external aid is receiving radio transmissions in their head? And so what we have to do is we start off with the most scientific version of something, but then we have to say, okay, how can we bring that down to a level that a typical viewer will be able to understand, but on the other hand doesn't make our genius mad scientist seem like too much of a normal person.
Do you see your fathers in the character of Dr. Walter Bishop?
A little bit, I think. It does come out a little bit.
Maybe a little bit, but... I'd say my dad is a pretty distinct personality that's very different from Walter's, but certainly the information gets fed in, and a certain way of thinking can get fed in.
Have you had the opportunity to spend any time on set?
The set is actually in New York City, and so the answer is no. We're out here in Los Angeles.
Hopefully the answer is not yet.
Yeah, we hope at some point we get the chance to do that, but it certainly hasn't happened yet.
So it sounds like you're involved in the script writing process, you know, from conception to the point where they're ready to shoot the episode.
Yes.
Right, because often, even after the script is already written, they're having to make changes later on in response to notes from the studio or from the network, and so they need to insert an explanation here or an extra scientific experiment there or something, and so they'll sometimes come to us to try to fill in those blanks.
So could you each sort of give me your definition of fringe science?
You want to take that one first?
I think hopefully what we're trying to do on the show is obviously part of fringe science is
pseudoscience.
Is pseudoscience, what they say in the pilot. But you know, what we found is that a lot of fringe science is science that people are talking about right now, that people are researching right now, that that scientists are developing right now, and we're just taking it, hopefully, 5 minutes into the future. And an example of that is in our third episode, literally the day before it aired, there was an article in CNN online that was released that said the U.S. military is developing technology to directly send messages into soldiers' brains so they can communicate wirelessly directly with soldiers. And that's what we have going on our show. We have a guy who's receiving radio transmissions in his brain that the bad guys are using to plot nefarious things with. So, you know, what is fringe science? Fringe science, hopefully, is exactly what's going to be happening tomorrow, you know, a week from now, a month from now, 2 years from now. The stuff that we're talking about on this show, you're going to start seeing, you know, either, you know, in journals, scientists are going to be using it, or corporations are actually going to be rolling out products that incorporate it.
Or at least in some form or another. I mean, there's no doubt that the kind of things that we're showing on the show, it's fictional, but we draw it from what we see are the things that people are working on currently. And so what I think is interesting is there are a variety of things that we would consider fringe science, like when people think of ESP, telepathy, teleportation, and so on. These are things that have been researched in the past that people have tried to find a basis for and apparently have failed. And so we would refer to those as fringe science. And yet what was fringe at one time might become reality now. So maybe it's not possible for people to communicate thoughts with each other just through their mind power yet, and yet they're working on the technology at this very moment that might enable that to happen. So in a sense, a lot of fringe science, you might regard it as proto-science. It's not science yet, but it could be one day.
You know, one of the other examples we always like to cite is a few weeks ago on 2020, they were interviewing one of the scientists who runs the CERN supercollider in CERN, Switzerland, the Large Hadron Collider. And someone asked, so what are you trying to gain out of this besides just having really big, cool, you know, physics projects to play with? And the scientist goes, well, what about teleportation? So we're not even making up a lot of what we're leaning into on the show. I mean, right now there are scientists out there who are really trying to push the bounds of what we think of as reality. And we're just really following their lead and hoping to give it a dramatic shape and having, you know, characters that we care about interact with those events and those scientific abilities, and not so much saying it's either good or bad, but just saying, look, science has consequences. Some of them can be good, some of them can be bad, you know, some of them can be used both ways. And that's what I would say really what fringe science is about. It's not so much about what is this scientific principle. It's really, how is science going to be used in our society? Who is going to use it? Who is going to have access to it? Because that really drives the stories that I think people care about. You know, how is this going to affect my life? Well, does teleportation sound interesting to you? Is that going to affect your life? I think so.
I think the word fringe itself explains a lot of what it's about. Fringe, it means on the very edge. We don't want things that are so far past the edge that we can't imagine them being real. On the other hand, we don't want something that is just so normal to our lives that it's boring. What's fascinating about the science on the fringe is that it's on the edge of possibility. Maybe it could happen.
Back in high school, were you interested in science? Did you have any idea of what you wanted to do when you grew up?
There was a big chunk of me that wanted to become an evolutionary biologist, and I actually took some classes in that in college. Truthfully, my story was actually mainly one about wanting to get involved in politics, and then as a result of my interest in politics, I got interested in economics, eventually decided that I needed to get the PhD in economics, and that sucked me into the world of econ, and as a result of that, I ended up becoming a professor, which I've done for the last 8 years, and then took a leave of absence to take this job. So it's been a weird and winding career path.
And on my side, I mean, my dad was obviously always involved in science, and I always had the science journals lying around the house. So I think I always had a familiarity with scientific concepts, the process, you know, what was cutting edge at the time. But I was interested in international relations, politics, the law, and just kind of always had it in my background that I wasn't afraid of science, I wasn't afraid of reading about it or talking about it or seeing it. And so I guess through that I came back to it on this show.
Yeah. I think that's essentially how we fell into the role of science guys on the show, because the truth is there are a lot of really highly intelligent, incredibly creative people around here. What makes us different to the extent that we're different at all is that we actually love to delve into the really technical material and then try to find a way to extract something from that that is understandable to the layman.
This conversation has really been fascinating, and I just want to thank both of you for taking the time to speak with us today.
Well, we enjoy doing it. Hope everyone keeps watching Fringe Tuesday nights at 9.
Thanks for talking with us.
Well, there you have it. That concludes our first ever podcast. My thanks to Glenn Whitman and Rob Chapetta, and do be sure to check your local listings and watch Fringe. It's really a great show. Thanks for listening, and we hope to bring you another podcast soon. Be well.